Good evening, Grand Rapids, and welcome to another episode of Oh Say Can You See, a weekly or bi-weekly live call-in television program brought to you by the CTV Society. We usually cover topics related to economics and politics. Tonight, we're going to stick pretty much to economics, presenting a positive vision rather than complaining about the current affairs, a system called participatory economics, or PERECON for short. Tonight with us is Matthew here. My name is John. And we're going to take phone calls for almost the entire television program tonight. So go to your cell phones and get the telephone ready. And you can quiz us on the topic of participatory economics. Is there anything you wanted to say, Matthew, of introductory comments?
Well, yeah. I think it's important to look at what hasn't worked in the past as far as economic proposals, programs. We have a roll-in tonight, which is from John Sinclair, who was a member of the MC5. He's from here in Michigan. And was a founding member of the White Panther Party. And he had this 10-point program of a cultural revolution, you know, but it wasn't, as we'll see in the clip, it wasn't really grounded in reality, you know. It didn't really have a system that has credibility like PERECON does. And so, you know, it quickly faded away. So I wanted to show it tonight as just an example of, you know, something that didn't really work, and then, you know, we can build from there. I mean, yeah, we may share some of the same values, some of the same desires, as we'll see in the clip, but, you know, we need a real structure of something that has credibility that'll work. So, yeah, I think we'll just go ahead and go into that roll-in right now.
Politics. John Sinclair, he was chairman of the White Panther Party and day on political Ann Arbor, and he got 10 years for two joints of marijuana.
Well, generally the White Panther program is cultural revolution by any means necessary. We've drawn up a 10-point program. First point is full endorsement and support for the Black Panther Party's 10-point program. Point two is total assault on the culture by any means necessary, including rock and roll, dope, and fucking in the streets. We believe that it's time now. We believe that the general social structure, the Western world, is crumbling. And that now is the time to increase the assault on this culture. We demand free exchange of all goods and all materials, and we demand the end of money, because money, we believe that money is is just a ruse that's been set up so one group of people can control another group of people. We believe that nothing costs anything in reality, that the only two elements there are in anything that's needed in a culture are labor and materials. The materials are provided by the earth. Labor is provided by people. These don't cost anything. But we believe we demand free food, free clothes, free dope, free music, free medical care, free housing.
He consults his notes.
Free transportation, free everything for everybody.
There it is.
There's no reason why this can't go into effect right now. The fifth point is free access to the information media and to the technology for all the people. We believe that people should be able to have control of television stations, radio stations, and we shouldn't have to put up with the crap that we get from these people now because they want to keep our vision limited and they don't want us to see what can be done with this stuff. We believe that schools and all major buildings should be turned into crash pads and given to students. Students should be relieved from their classes. That's all students at all levels. And should be able to live in these buildings, use the gymnasiums to dance in, cover the floors with mattresses, and live in them and make some use out of them instead of wasting their time going in and getting pumped full of indoctrination material.
So when you see this guy, all you want to do is arrest him. You know what I mean? I mean, if somebody walked up to me today and started talking like this, I'd probably be frightened, you know. Way to get this guy out of here. You realize when you write something like this, what people always mean when they say, wow, you changed so much, you know. On the inside, you're still the same person, but you watch this, you can see what they're talking about anyway, you know. I was like, what do you mean I changed so much? You know, I'm listening to the same records I listened to then, you know. I'm in the same place, you know. All these things are the same.
Free all prisoners at once. They are brothers. We demand an end to conscription and, in fact, an end to armies altogether. Because they aren't necessary. If you haven't got private property, you haven't got nothing to defend. Bob Dylan says, if you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose. Fifth point, free all the people from their leaders. Leaders suck. Because if you got leaders telling people what to do and other people that got to follow them and rules and shit like that, it isn't any good. You just have a master-slave relationship. In a free culture, the people will be able to know, they'll know what to do, they'll be educated and informed, all information will be made available to them, and everybody will know what the fuck to do. They won't have to have some creep telling them.
Oh, boy. What do you think about winning over the broad masses of the people and organizing a broad revolutionary movement? You know, it's... You can't do it like that. I don't know how you can do it here, obviously.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Okay.
I see what you mean by him not being very grounded, and he recognizes that himself, not being able to reach a broad mass of people in a revolutionary movement through that kind of pie-in-the-sky thinking. And tonight, that's what we're here to do, is to ground it, to forward the revolution by putting forth at least one piece of what he was talking about. He was jumping around from the police to education to being no money and jumping around, no bosses. Bosses suck and all that.
Yeah,
but that's just a lot of... we can agree with it. I agree with it.
Yeah, you know, and just to credit that clip, there was a clip from a film called Growing Up in America where, you know, it showed different, you know, cultural revolutionary speaker, you know, people from the 60s and then juxtapose, you know, showed their lives now, you know, and what they're doing now and looking back on themselves. So yeah, you know, we can agree with a lot of the ideals that he's saying, but there needs to be a structure, you know. It can't just be a free-for-all like it was in the video. I think that's one of the things that we've learned from the 60s and 70s, that we need a structure. We have to have accountability for it to really work in society. Mm-hmm. So
that's what we're going to start doing right now. At this point, I would like to throw the phone number up on the screen so that we can start getting phone calls as soon as possible. I haven't memorized the phone number, so I can't rattle it off right now. But they'll have it up there pretty soon. And what we're going to start out with is building a general framework of revolutionary struggle. And it's not something that is so concrete that it doesn't have room for debate, but in general, struggles can be divided up into four spheres, which are the kinship sphere. I'll just rattle them off. The kinship sphere, the community sphere, the political sphere, and the economic sphere. And there's also something to note, which is that they're all related to the environmental, or the Mother Earth. So is there anything you'd want to start off with one of those spheres? What your impressions are, or what the struggles are in those?
Well, I personally agree that all of those do come out of a base of the Mother Earth. And we have spoken before that environmentalism could be another sphere in itself. But generally, I like the model of those four areas coming out of the Mother Earth, because that is the base, you know, of our life support system on this planet. So yeah, what we primarily want to focus on tonight is the economic sphere. Mm-hmm. And with the other ones, they're all interrelated. With kinship, with community, with politics, they're interrelated. But we want to focus on mainly economics and economics alone, because it's my understanding that the situation under capitalism now is that politics and economics are too intertwined, and so that creates a lot of problems, and it gets away from some of the values that I think that we all share, and the values that are central to Paracon.
They are intertwined. Just to be a little clearer, since I just rattled them off, could we have the first graphic up there again, if we didn't have it up there? The kinship sphere is the realm where we raise the next generation and have families. And that can go wrong in the sense of there being a patriarchy or sexism. And the struggle in that generally goes under the name of feminism. In the community sphere, or sometimes called the cultural sphere, that's where we have cultural celebration and communitarian unity. And that can go wrong in, like, racism or virulent nationalism. Mm-hmm. The politics, I think everybody has a definition of that. It can go wrong, of course, with dictatorships or authoritarianism in general, and it can get slightly better if you have a representative democracy such as we have, and it can get even better or do away with the authority if you move to anarchy. And then in the economy, you can have something like fascism, which is wedding of the politics and the economy, or have a command economy like the Soviet Union or capitalism that we have, where we have owners who make all the rules. And hopefully Paracon would, as we explore it, you'll see that it's a liberatory idea that will get rid of our masters. So did we have that graphic up there? I missed it if we did. Anything else you wanted to say on that that broad outline of, and then we're going to zoom into economy?
No. I think you covered it fairly well. I think that we need to focus on the economy, and just to say with the political sphere is that that what politics does is it, as we're coming up to election time too, is that it moves away from self-management, which is integral to anarchist thought. And you know, anarchism isn't the free-for-all that we saw in the video clip earlier. It's, you know, more of self-management, participatory self-management. We need accountability, and with politics is giving power away to somebody else to make decisions for you that influence the economics. Mm-hmm. And they're intertwined. We're moving closer and closer to some kind of fascism as we go along in this free market capitalism cycle. Mm-hmm. So with Paracon, it creates an alternative, something, you know, that works more for the people's values. I think we should focus on the economics, because that is a central problem, is economic inequality. And that's what the society is about, uh-huh. The show. So,
yeah, this TV society came from the Society for Economic Equality. Let's zoom into the economy then, and I guess a good place to start would be with the definition, and we could show that on the screen. The economy is a set of institutions for producing, allocating, and consuming stuff. Stuff being goods and services. That's three things: producing, allocating, and consuming. And we'll get into institutions for each of those as we go along. But just to be clear about what we mean by an institution, we're not talking about a specific building that something happens in, or a particular body of directors being the institution. Rather, it's a set of roles that people play, and that is the real fundamental definition of any institution, is the roles that people can plug into in which to either participate fully or be told what to do like a robot. In our current system, it's pretty constrained to being told what the boss tells you to do. There we go. Excellent.
Yeah, it's been up there.
that's pretty basic definition of an economy. It pairs away a lot of things that you might. It doesn't say anything about money in there. An economy isn't about money necessarily. And money is just a tool to make an economy mm-hmm. go. And it could have money or it could not have money. A barter system is an allocation system, in fact, that doesn't require money necessarily. It just has goods, and people agree to exchange those goods.
Money is just a means for storing wealth, really. You know, it's a symbol mm-hmm. to store wealth. I mean, we could use seashells were used in the same way, you know. Mm-hmm. We want to get into a little bit about, you know, different kinds of economies, right? There's more of a communist kind of a economy on one hand and a capitalist economy on the other. So maybe we can go into, you know, the way things are now and, you know, that have been.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Well, communism is state controlled. So that's the central institution there that is controlling, you know, everything else. It's centralized. And capitalism is centralized as well, but is you know, more based on the market system. And Paracon, on the other hand, doesn't use markets necessarily as a institution, right? A market is an institution.
Right. It's an allocation institution, in fact. The state in the communist role, my understanding, I've never lived under one, thank goodness, but they're in control. They own the productive. The state owns the productive capacity of the economy. So the state is the production institution that we talked about. The allocation system in communism is a planning system, not a market. It does have prices, it does have money, but the prices are arrived at by a Politburo or something, some group of people coming up with an idea in their head of what would be good for people and contacting factories and saying, please, they probably never said please, but do this. And the factories would say, well, we'll do our best. And they would kind of maybe jigger around the plan a little bit if they saw they were failing, which they were bound to do. And that was really it. The consumer didn't really have very many options in that system, so there's almost no consumption institution to speak of. It was all on the production, and the production by the state and allocation by the central planners.
Mm-hmm. Long bread lines.
Yeah. So how would you contrast that to our current system in that production, allocation, consumer institutions? What institutions do we have now?
Well, things are being more and more privatized. And so in a different sort of way, you know, control and input and direct democracy is put out of the people's hands into private interests, you know. And under the free market style of capitalism, there's the sense that that's an inherent right, you know, to use the resources of the earth as freely as possible, no matter the exploitation that happens of those resources, human resources, the environment, whatnot, you know, all to go into really profits. It's not something that works on the long term for the majority of the people. So what we want is a system that works for the people, and participatory economics where people can be involved.
Right. I know I was under the impression for a long time that we have a phone call. Let me.
Frank's on the line.
All right, Frank. I bet you I know who that is. That the capitalist part of our capitalist system and the production side was bad. That having one person own the factory and be able to make the rules, that was bad. But then I thought the market was like a democratic thing, that allowed participation. But now. And that's the allocation institution, the market. But now I've learned that really a market does put people in conflict with one another, and it leaves out a lot of important information that needs to be processed by people to make intelligent choices. And so true participation is not really possible under our market system, and so we have to come up with something else. And I think they're saying take Frank, and Frank wants to be on the line. So
Frank's on the line.
Hello, Frank.
Howdy.
Hello.
Hey, my quick question to you is, what could be more participatory than a free market?
Well, that is what we were going to get to. Did you hear what I was saying about some of the shortcomings of a market, how it leaves out?
Oh, I agree. We don't live in utopia. I mean, I'm not saying that the free market capitalistic system doesn't have warts, but, I mean, you keep bandying that word participatory around.
Uh-huh.
And in my view, the truest form of a participatory economy is one that's driven by a free market.
Well, I would say, you know, I think the word free in that sense is misused because it's not really free. You know, you get involved in a market, you sort of have to take what's there. Yeah, you might have some options of,
can I just stop you right there? When you say you have to take what's there.
Well, you have to buy what's there. You know, there's no...
If there's enough people to create a demand for anything, mm-hmm. be it a good or service, it will appear.
No, that's not true.
Okay, could you give me an example where that wouldn't be true?
Yes, I think we could all agree that we would like to have no commercials on television. And yet, there are, except for this channel right here, which is not created by the market, by the way, there is not commercial-free television that's
free. But we all want television.
Well,
you can't have television without commercials.
That's an example. You asked for an example of a market not providing something that we want.
I think that's a flawed argument because people want television, correct? And you cannot have television without commercials.
Well, I would urge you to keep watching the show. I hope you will keep watching the show.
Yeah,
and
please do.
We will get more into the alternative to a market. And if you still... don't feel that it measures up, then call back in and press us on it
Great.
Again.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Let us explain Paracon a little bit more and get into some of the details.
Yeah, thanks for your call. Well, that wasn't the Frank that I thought, the Frank that we both know. So let's see where we are. We've talked about an economy being institutions for producing, allocating, and consuming things. And we've talked about our current capitalist system and the communist system as what institutions they've had. I guess one thing we didn't mention on the consuming institutions, in both communism and capitalism, the only institution really is in the economy is the individual. They're really very difficult to get together with other mm-hmm. people and make...
To have any sort of power.
Yeah, to have make group decisions about mm-hmm. things that you might want to consume as a group, like a park or a hospital.
Yeah, because those are things that are consumed by everybody, in a sense. But the only way to really have any participation in decision-making on that is through politics. And we want, you know, economics to be separate from politics, because politics is... giving your power away to somebody else to make decisions for you on something. And so it's not direct, you know, it's not direct democracy. It's not direct self-management. There's individual and group consumption. There always will be. In a family, in a neighborhood. And we don't want to give our power away like that.
All right. I agree. I totally agree with that. I guess the next thing to do would be to get into... We have a new caller, also named Frank, on the line. I wonder if this is the Frank that we... Hello, Frank.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Frank. Do you have a question or comment for us?
Yes, I was interested in that part of the discussion in which you talked about the fact that the economy, or presumably the productive part of it at least, would not be owned by private or by owners or by the state, but rather by, I don't know what, but something else. And I wondered what the something else was. And then the other thing I was wondering was, how do you change an economy from one that's owned by private owners to whatever Paracon has in mind?
Okay.
And I'll hang up and listen to you discuss this. Okay?
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Frank. Yeah, that's actually what we're going into next is production and the means of production and who mm-hmm. controls that. And we were going to mention some things about production, inputs, and outputs and motives. Mm-hmm.
Well, his question to who owns it, I think could resolve into two different, or actually three different answers. One would be the state, but without any decision-making power. This would probably be valid in a transitionary period, mm-hmm. Where the state owns it and is able to protect it so that no one can, like, steal it or cut down a forest that everybody has agreed to own in common. The other is a commons. We're not used to that in the United States so much. But in other parts of the world, commons are still very common. And a lot of people around the world are putting a lot of effort into protecting the commons, their own mm-hmm. commons, from being privatized. And another and the final probably solution, which Perricon would eventually move to, is to do away with the idea of ownership altogether. That's I know, a little bit hard even for me to visualize, and I'm a pretty open-minded person. But the point of ownership is, as I see it, is to be able to make decisions about how something is going to be used. And the point of Perricon is making those decisions be participatory. So whatever framework it fell into, the state or the commons, would be fine as long as the decision-making power was not over in the state.
Mm-hmm. In the politic realm.
Right.
Yep.
I hope that answered that question. And as far as how we get there from here, I think this is a two-part show, by the way. We're on this week and next week, and we probably won't get through the whole thing this week. And I think next week is probably when we'll get to talking about how to get there, what people can do today in their current work, mm-hmm. and the longer-term plans.
We want to go into some of that, though, now. We still have half the show left, so yeah. We want to go into... we got production. There's some class issues here, too. Okay, we have another caller on
all
the
right.
line.
Wow.
Steve.
Getting a lot. I'm so glad we're getting a lot of calls. Keep them going.
Steve, are you there? Do you have a question
hey,
or comment
Steve.
For us?
Yeah, I guess I just don't see how what you're describing is any different from communism.
Well, we haven't really gotten into describing it yet. We've only described communism and capitalism, so... I can see why you wouldn't see it's different than anything, because we haven't really
so
defined what
that.
It's not.
Let's go into that. The Perricon is it is different in a fundamental way, is that Perricon is based on four main values that are central to the way it works and go through all levels of Perricon, all aspects of Perricon. Are based on four main values, and those are diversity, equity, self-management, and solidarity.
Okay, I mean, those are words. How would this actually work?
Well, we're getting into it. You know, there's different, you know, you have to give us some time, be patient with us. But these values are people-centered, so... Yeah, let's go into this.
I think the point of, I mean, at least as I understand communism, and perhaps we have another caller, and they erased your name already. I'm sorry, but I don't know what your understanding of communism is, but mine is that it was run by the state, and we've already ruled that out. That Perricon is not run by the state, and mm-hmm. so
who will run it?
Well,
the people will.
The people in participation.
Oh, come on, guys. I mean, you're dancing around hiding behind this fig leaf. It sounds like communism.
Well,
I'm trying to give you guys a fair shake here, but I really, you say it's going to be run by the people. What the hell does that mean?
Well, let us explain.
You can explain to Joe Average on the street.
Yeah, sure. Let us explain, if you'll give us time, and let us explain.
Well, you've had 45 minutes. I mean, all I hear you guys talking about the difference between communism and capitalism, that's history. You're proposing something new.
Yes, we are.
Let's get to it.
All right, okay. That's where we're going. Thanks for your call. And we have another call immediately. Andy. Hello, Andy. You're on CTV.
Yeah, hi, John.
Hello.
I'm kind of in agreement with Steve, although I would not phrase it like that.
Uh-huh.
Are there any existing models, some sort of a concrete example that maybe help us understand this Paracon a little bit better?
Because
what Steve doesn't know is that you're about one of the smartest guys I've ever met, John. Andy Pupil, we went to grade school together.
Andy Pupil? Oh, my God, I remember you.
Yeah. I was flipping through the channels, I saw you, I thought, man, I better listen to this guy. So are there any examples you can cite?
Not as a fully functioning Paracon system, but there are participatory economic workplaces, and also even some consumer councils, of course, have been... and those are terms that we'll get around to defining, but the publishers of this book here, Thinking Forward, which is a book that's about participatory economics, this press is run on Paracon values, and their jobs are defined by the workers themselves, and they make all the decisions themselves.
It's not a hierarchy.
So it is a workable thing. I guess that's one thing I left out of my introduction, is that these ideas are worked out by a couple other real smart guys, one named Michael Elbert, who wrote both these books, and a number of others. He's been around for many years. You might know him as the editor of Z Magazine, or the proprietor, or whatever you call it, of ZNet website. And another guy named Robin Hanel, who's a professor of political economy at Princeton. So these are not, like John Sinclair, some hippie freak, revolutionary dope heads making up stuff out of the air. These are, some of their books are filled with a lot of numbers that I don't understand.
And actually based on working examples of this.
Yeah, and there are working examples out there. This press is one. There's a record company that's another. Other examples that are close, very close, are co-ops. Some co-ops out there, even though they might not know it, they're very close to a Paracon model.
Yeah, and they already have a lot of these values and live the values of Paracon every day. So it's a good place to start is with co-ops.
All right.
Great. Well, thank you for the explanation.
Yeah, and hopefully I'll talk to you sometime, Andy. Send me an email. My email will be on the screen. Yeah, I know you've got email. I bet. Anyway.
Yeah,
okay. We got another call here. Wow, they're just pouring in. And that's Erica?
Eric. Eric, do you have a question for us?
Yes, I do. I have a comment and a question.
Yes, okay. Go ahead.
My comment is this. It's been said of the difference between capitalism and communism, that in capitalism, man exploits man, and in communism, it's the other way around. I'd be curious about your thoughts on this. The reason I bring it up is it seems like what we need in our economy in this country is a socialized economy that will respond to our basic human needs, and a capitalist economy that will respond to the needs for those of us that want to make a profit on top of that. Mm-hmm. I don't see the two systems as being diametrically opposed. I see that our country and our culture have a big fear of calling anything socialized, but by socialized, I'm including the notion of public schools.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One correction to what you said. You said making a profit, and capitalists never make a profit. They only take profits.
Yeah, it's on the backs of other people.
Yes. Hopefully, some people have called this socialism as it was meant to be. I tend to shy away from the term socialism or communism, because it's just confusing. It's links to the Soviet Union and Czechoslovakia and China, and we don't want to replicate their failures. And so I just do away with the whole thing.
But, well, I would disagree with you. It doesn't seem to me like making the word disappear is really going to change the concept any. I think we need to get over our fear of using that word.
Yeah, I think maybe as we go along, we'll see that there are some other differences between Paracon and socialism as it's worked out.
Both. My concern is for an economy of socialist capitalism. That's my
okay. Concern. Right. Yeah. Market socialism. It's sometimes called. Yeah. That's what they have in Sweden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Market socialism.
And I do
Democratic
believe that
socialism.
This country and the world are headed in a direction of decentralization of authority. I've heard some thoughts around that from.
Well, I certainly hope so. I'm all into decentralizing authority. We have another call already.
Could I ask one more brief question?
Yes, go ahead.
Sure.
What happened to the Easttown Food Co-op, and when's it going to come back?
Oh.
Well, there's a food buying club out there that you could get involved with. You could call the station, I'm sure, and maybe get a phone number to call to find out about that.
No, it's a broader question than that. What happened to the Easttown Food Co-op? It was
dissolved.
Was the soul of Easttown. It's been long gone, and when, if ever, might it come back?
I wasn't
involved
in it.
It's more a rhetorical question, but I appreciate your comment.
I wasn't involved in it, but it's gone. From what I know, there was problems from not owning the building. There was rent problems. There was participation problems, I guess.
That case could be a microcosm of the issues you guys are discussing.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
All right.
Thanks
for the call. And we have another caller, Rick. Thanks for calling. Your question or comment?
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
I wanted to commend Matt there for his comment on the fact that the idea of anarchy does not represent a bunch of people running around breaking things and breaking law and so forth.
Yeah.
So I want to comment on that. But on this idea, which I think could be called a form of socialism or perhaps a large co-op, you know, the word socialism has been so demonized in our country, and if someone really doesn't like what you're saying, they call you a communist, like I think three calls ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder, how do you get past the idea? You know, so many people who are opposed to any kind of progressive thinking are always saying, well, we don't want the government in our life, you know. And yet it almost seems as if they've been so inculcated with the idea that they have to work for someone else, you know, the wage slave idea, that if you tell them that they have to get away from that, it'd be for their own good, they don't want to hear that. They don't want the government running their life, but they want some business owner making them come in 5 or 6 days a week, punching a time clock, working
many times
at a crummy job and not getting paid what they're worth to begin with.
Well,
I guess my question is, how do we get through to these folks that there is a way to escape wage slavery and it doesn't have to be called communism?
Well, I think one point, and we were about to get to it before we got all these wonderful phone calls, including yours, is that there's been theoretically a gap left in the concepts that we use that go under the term of class. And when you have a flawed theory, the outcomes always come out flawed.
Mm-hmm.
Marx is credited, and probably not solely, but is generally the father of class thought. And he identified two classes, one which was the capitalists, the owners, and the other which is the workers. In reality, at least I think in reality, and Matthew disagrees to some extent, which he can explain, but we agree that there is another dynamic which isn't to do with ownership, but which is to do with decision-making power, and that there's another class, a third class that Marx didn't identify, that Michael Albert calls the coordinator class. And these are the people who took over in the Soviet Union. The state owned everything, but it was this group of engineers and planners and pinheads who got to make all the decisions. And that's why people rightly fear the idea of communism and socialism.
So yeah, there's a group of people, a class, you know, emerging that is somewhat, you know, loosely defined, but yeah, the coordinator class, people that hold the power, you know, middle management type people. And it goes into politics too. People that are elected to make decisions, you know, county commissioners and you know, other city planner type people that aren't necessarily owners, that don't, you know, own corporations and companies. They aren't like CEOs, but they hold a lot of power over other people, you know, and it's dubbed the coordinator class.
Yeah, I've heard, I haven't heard it, I heard it in my own head. I thought that for a while that participatory economics might be dubbed socialism 2.0, but that's kind of geeky, so... but myself, I don't use the word socialism. I guess Rick is off the line. We do have another call. Bob is on the line. Hello, Bob. Thanks for your call.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello. Hey, Bob. Be a question or comment on participatory economics?
Both, I guess. I'm trying real hard to read between the lines here.
Uh-huh.
At what you're getting at.
Yeah.
And just some good intention criticism of you guys.
Okay.
Is quit couching your words. I mean, there's nothing wrong with socialism. There's nothing wrong with communism. If that's what you guys believe in and advocate, have the intellectual honesty to step up to the plate and put it on the table.
For myself, they're not.
Lose some respect.
For myself, they're not what I believe in, though.
I'm
trying to be clear about that. That I think there is a definite difference between what we're trying to explain here and our. Not getting through the program very quickly, and what has been known as communism or socialism. And for myself, it's not a question of couching it. If I were a communist, I'd come out and say it. I'm actually more of an anarchist
I would too.
Myself.
And it's not the case. It's really not the case. I mean, I agree with some socialist values, but we're here tonight to talk about Paracon. So I would
Paracon
like to.
Paracon is a word, gentlemen.
It is. It's a system that's out there. You know that.
Like the Easttown Co-op.
It's very broad based. So let's get into it. Let's get into it more.
We do have another call on the line. So
another one.
Thanks for your question and comment. And we're going to Keith right now, Keith. Hello, Keith.
Hello, yes.
Yeah, your question or comment on participatory economics.
Well, yes, I'd just like to talk about how the class system has such separation between of powers, you know, that obviously the rich have so much more power and the poor feel rejected, neglected, and so therefore they have a reactionary sense and they say, well, I don't care anymore. I don't want to uphold those values. And, you know, the rich take advantage of that. And the rich can organize because they have the power, and they can do things like price fixing, like especially with cereal companies, you know, a box of cereal costs $3 to $4, which mm-hmm. we all know it doesn't cost anywhere near that to produce. Mm-hmm. And so these companies can gang up on the little people that can't get organized. Now, I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay.
Okay?
Thanks for your call. I would just like to say that the workers have power too. The workers have power to organize on the shop floor, and you know it's something that happens all the time. You know, there's workers' councils, there's workers' committees where people can get together and decide things for themselves somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been plenty of shows on CTV on that complaint. We're trying to move forward here, but we have yet another call. Scott is on the line. Hello, Scott.
How are you tonight?
Yeah, your question or comment on participatory economics.
Yes, I was just curious, what do you think about rentals in our economy?
Rentals?
I don't know.
Rentals.
That's a
capitalist tool to extract money from you. That's really all it comes down to.
So let's go into the values.
So you rattled them off there. And could we have the graphic on the screen again of the four values? There they are. Equity, solidarity, diversity, self-management, plus efficiency. So it's actually a fifth value there. The reason I broke that out is because that's a quantitative value for measuring things, whereas the other are people-centered values. And the reason we put them out there right away is because we have to be clear about where we're trying to go. We didn't put profits there for owners. We didn't say the point of this economy is to make the biggest pile of stuff possible. It doesn't say just to provide for needs and nothing else so that we all wear gray suits and eat boring bread sandwiches. These are the values that our economy is supposed to strive for. And I think we should go into them a little bit deeper, each one,
yeah.
So we can say how they impinge on our decisions as we go forward designing this participatory economy. So go ahead, take one.
Well, I would take diversity. What we're looking for in diversity is diversity of human potential, of people's diverse talents and abilities, rather than just a diversity of products that, you know, you go into the store with money in your hand, you can pick between this or that, you know. And we're not talking about that kind of diversity. We're talking about a system that brings out the diversity of human potential. Also, self-management, a system where, you know, the people can make decisions, you know, based on what their own interests are.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can extrapolate more on. But diversity, I got that.
Yeah, the self-management, Michael Albert had a little neat little definition for it, is decision-making power in proportion to the amount that you're affected by the outcome of the decision being made.
Yeah.
So okay. If we're talking about a decision of what kind of picture to have on your desk, that's, you can be a dictator. You can say, I want this picture on my desk. No one's business but my own. And the same with, what kind of drugs you want to put into your body. But if you're buying a car, other people are impinged on it. And a market system, for instance, mm-hmm. does not allow anybody else to have any say. It's just you and the seller. Some people call that freedom. Other people call that oppression. I would tend to see that as oppression. We have a call. No? Oh, we're being asked if we want to do the roll-in. No, we're going to skip the roll-in, I think.
Yeah.
Because we want to get through these values before the end of the show. So that's self-management, proportional self-management, participatory self-management. Obviously, to affect a decision in proportion, there has to be some discussion about how much you're being affected. It's not one person, one vote doesn't always work all the time. Consensus will not work all the time. It has to be mutually decided upon on a case-by-case basis often.
Mm-hmm.
Another value up there is equity. That could be also use the term economic fairness, some people talk about. That is that the idea is that you should get out of the economy in proportion that you put into the economy. And the measurement of what we put into the economy is not how big a pile of stuff, again, that you're able to produce, because big people can produce more stuff by their physical labor than small people. But it's rather, if two people are working equally hard, they should get rewards commensurate with their effort and sacrifice. And you want to take solidarity?
Yeah, solidarity as far as production and consumption is something that goes beyond, you know, one individual workplace. It goes beyond state borders, national borders, to be in solidarity with people that are maybe affected by the choices of consumption or what is produced. An example that comes to mind is like sweatshops. You know, there's no link in our current system. You know, I mean, there's a struggle there going on, but there's no solidarity between what is consumed and then what is, and then how it's made. Mm-hmm.
I guess if I can jump in,
another
dimension of solidarity is compared to our market system where buyer and seller are put in competition. It's the holy grail of a market is to have competition. Solidarity, on the other hand, is cooperation, that people aren't in head-to-head, one person getting ahead at the expense of the other, trying to sell as little for a buck or buy as much for a buck as possible, but rather coming to a mutual agreement about the worth of items and how they're affecting us. Mm-hmm. And the last, we're running quickly out of time, so the last one is efficiency. And the thing to note about that, it's not the efficiency of making profits for the boss or necessarily any mechanical efficiency. It's how well we use our natural resources and our human labor in order to reach the other goals, the other values that we just laid out: solidarity, diversity, equity, and self-management. We're down to a minute and a half here, so we're going to wrap up. We didn't get quite as far, but
there's a lot more.
Next week on Wednesday, live again, we'll be here and we'll go through the production, allocation, and consumption institutions, actually, so that people who have called in saying, what's the difference between this and what we already have, will be able to get more, get beyond just these nice words that we've been putting out and see that they actually live up to the values that we've espoused.
For sure. And in the meantime, let's get the website on the screen so that folks can look to the website as well. There's a vast amount of resources there about Paracon and lots of different articles.
Yeah, it's www.paracon.org. O-R-G.
It is. .org.
I'm being told that the next show is in two weeks. I don't think that's true, though. I think it's next week. It's the first Wednesday of the month, so it should be next week.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for all the calls, and thanks to the crew for volunteering to come down and make us look good.
Until next time.
Until next time. That's good.
Yeah.